Welcome everybody, this is How to English, Teach and Learn with Gavin M.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given when necessary.
Em, it's the final episode of season 4 and I think we need to do something special for the followers.
Well, that's lucky, Gav, because we have prepared something very special today.
That's right, and we have invited some learners to ask us some questions. And it will not only be us, Em, who answer these questions, but in fact, some of our teacher colleagues.
Ask your teacher
a question.
Is the topic.
It is episode 26. Ask your teacher.
Our students asked some great questions, Gav, and we have got some great answers.
I hope so, Em. And we've invited some very special teacher guests to also contribute to today's show.
So, Gav, without any further ado, shall we get on with it?
Let's hear the first question from Peter.
Hi, Gav and Em. This is Peter from Prague. Please, I'd like to ask you a question. How do you motivate your students?
Thank you, Peter. That is a very good question, and I would say the best way for me to motivate my students is to pick some interesting topics that I think my students are going to enjoy. That's a good start. And to deliver and teach those topics with as much energy and enthusiasm as I can muster.
That is such a nice answer, but that would be a different answer for each student because there can't just be one set of topics. One theme that everybody's going to enjoy discussing.
That's right, Gav, and that is why I am amazing. I try to be, anyway.
Can I answer that question now?
I really want you to. I thought we were going to both answer all these questions, in fact.
Well, I'll do my best, but my answer is more a question.
You can't answer a question with a question, Gav. This is ask your teacher and then get an answer.
Well, this time I think I'm going to say students perhaps should motivate themselves.
Ooh.
Is that a bit controversial?
It is a little bit controversial. I do agree. But if you've got a student who isn't exactly feeling it, I think you might have to do something a bit extra, which I think is what Peter's point was. How do you motivate your students?
That is a very good point and a very good question. Therefore, I shall say...
Don't have to be so dramatic.
I show a lot of interest. I am very curious to know more about their views and their opinions and their experiences. And I honestly really enjoy learning about my students. And that's what motivates me and therefore means that I will motivate my students.
I understand. So you mean you show interest in the students and the students will... deliver.
Precisely.
Gav, let's hear from our first guest teacher, Sergio, and hear how he answers this question.
Hello, Gavin M. Hello, everybody who listens to How to English. This is Sergio Viola. I am a teacher in Rio de Janeiro. I'd like to focus on the question dealing with students. First of all, we know that we have to foster a positive learning environment. If you don't have a positive learning environment, of course, people are not going to engage. It's important to encourage open communication, make learning enjoyable, and emphasize the relevance of the content to their own lives. That's something that I usually do almost naturally. Yes, I have already incorporated this to my own practice in a very natural way. But sometimes it takes some thinking until you get the handle of it.
Thank you, Sergio. That is a really good answer, and I think exactly what I would say if I could say it as eloquently as you. What do you think, Em?
Absolutely. Sergio really nailed it for me too. It's so important to foster those relationships and keep maintaining them.
I absolutely agree.
Gav, what's our next question?
Our next question is from Olga. Let's have a listen.
Hello, Gav and Em, this is Olga. What was the last thing you taught and how did you teach it?
Gav, you answer this first.
Thank you, Olga. Em, the last thing I taught was developing skills for working together, problem solving, giving instructions, following instructions.
So what was that? Some kind of business book or a kind of worksheet for team building?
No, Em. It was, in fact, an online escape room that I played with my students.
Fun. How did you do that?
Well, I found a website that had a few different online escape rooms with lots of puzzles. And I said to my students, tell me what to do. I will follow your instructions. And we had to escape together using teamwork, collaborating. All the students had different skill sets. And it was really nice seeing them come together as they solved the different puzzles.
That sounds fantastic. Was there a theme?
The theme was ancient Egypt.
So a bit of vocab in there.
Can you guess what some of those words were, Em? Do you remember the big box that you keep the mummies in?
Sarcophagus.
Very good.
Pyramids.
Of course.
Sand.
There was plenty of sand around.
Sphinx. Why is that funny?
It's not.
Sphinx.
What's the next question?
Let's just move.
Em, what did you teach last?
I did advice in my last lesson.
You did advice? What did you do?
I taught how to use phrases, modals mainly, like you should, you ought to, you'd better.
And was there a context?
It was everyday business problems, but quite funny ones. Actually, Gav, I think you wrote this one.
Did I really?
You did. What
were some of the funny advice that you had to give?
Well, people had problems like they'd been paid double their salary.
Oh, that's a terrible situation.
What should you do in that situation? Mm-hmm. People had problems such as booking a holiday the same week as a boss they didn't like very much. So same resort with someone you don't get on with at work.
Eek.
I think my favourite one was you're giving a tour of a factory, quite a dangerous factory. You've got 8 people in the group and at the end you've only got 7. What should you do?
Oh, I shouldn't be laughing.
No, it's not funny.
That is not funny. You should retrace your steps. You must make sure everybody has adhered to the guidelines. And finally, just change that number from 8 to 7 on the form as you were entering. No, don't do that.
No, Gav. That would be a really bad thing to do.
That's not good advice, is it?
No, definitely don't do that. It was along all those sort of lines. Some of the students had problems, the other students had to give advice, and then the student with the problem had to decide which one to choose, which was good because they all had to come up with different solutions, which made them think quite hard about the problem.
I like that activity. M. Let's get our next question from Frieda.
Hello, Gavin M. This is Frieda from Germany. My question is, what's a typical day for a TEFL teacher? So what do you do then?
Thank you, Frieda. That's a great question. And it has changed for me quite a bit in the last few years. So it used to be split shift, lessons in the morning with a long break, lessons in the afternoon or early evening, and going out all day, being around the city, going to offices to teach. But these days, I'm sitting at home all day without a split shift. I generally do a block of lessons from the morning to the early afternoon, and then I'm done for the day. So online teaching has transformed my normal day. What about you, Gav?
Em, that transition sounds a lot like what many teachers have done. It's such a varied job. Me, personally, I'm up early, have a break during the day, then I have some evening classes. Thank you for the question, Frieda. And next, this is Johannes.
Hi, Gavin M. This is Johannes. I have a question. How do you prepare for a class?
Thank you, Johannes. Well, this fits in very well with the previous question. I roll out of bed, make a cup of coffee, I sit in a comfortable chair, and I switch on my computer and I'm ready. But
I don't believe you. Really?
But seriously, I usually pick a theme for the lesson and I have some worksheets or a video ready, maybe a quiz. For example, I might have some HR topics like useful phrases for appraisals or dealing with conflict at work. And I've got all the materials ready on my computer for my online lesson with my student. But, Em, if my student decides they want to talk about something else, they have another topic, maybe they want to do some emailing, maybe they've got a presentation to give, then I will abandon everything I will follow the student's lead and then probably I'll find some materials while we're chatting, maybe a quick video on YouTube, maybe a worksheet with some key phrases that we can practice together to help my student prepare. How about you?
Pretty much what you've said already. I always have something planned. I'm ready to abandon that if something else happens and the student wants to talk, but I always have something ready. I have a folder on my laptop for every class I've got. So I always, before the lesson, look at that folder, look at what they've done, what they haven't done, look at what they did last week. I also look at the attendance to see who came last week so that I'm aware of anyone who might have missed the lesson. So I can then ask the students who did attend to explain to the students who didn't. So I think it's always good for me to have that in my head, who's been in the lessons and who might need to catch up.
And don't forget to make yourself a nice cup of tea, Em.
Oh, absolutely. That is a priority.
Priority. I like it. We must apologise. There may be some puns throughout this episode.
Gav, before we go to the next question, let's find out how one of our friends, Teacher Sar, prepares for a lesson.
I like to plan ahead, so I have my syllabus and at least 10 to 15 lessons prepared. Now, right now I teach at college, so things change a little. Sessions are really short, 2 hours a week. I have the plan prepared, but there are some things you need to change. So I like to visit the syllabus, and then I compare it to the plan I pre-designed. I try to modify the parts that maybe are not going to work with a specific group. After reviewing the plan, I have to make sure that the teacher-centered time shouldn't be more than 30% of the class. The rest should be either individual work or group discussions. Well, that's for the pragmatics and semantics class, or the phonetics and phonology class. There is another class that is called materials development. For that course, we really try to have at least 20 minutes of teacher-centered time, then we discuss anything in the material or the resources that should be checked, and after that we get to design. There are some ingenious designs, games, worksheets that some of my learners have developed for their own classes.
That's really great. It's key to have a syllabus prepared before the course begins and try to stick to it, but be flexible if you are able to. Good tip, Sar.
Who's next, Gav?
This question is from Silke.
Hi, Gavin. This is Silke. I have a question for you. Have you ever got rid of a student or been fired by one?
Ooh, that is a very good question, Silke. Thank you. Well, honestly, yes, I have. I haven't so much fired a student. I would say politely stopped teaching them. I don't know how else to say it.
That is very polite, Em. You mean you fired them?
I suppose so. It just sounds so harsh. But yeah, I must say, it hasn't happened very often. Very, very rarely.
And what leads to a student being fired by you?
I have got quite a high tolerance level, I'd say. But this was a particularly demanding situation. I had to go to this student's house. So they wanted lessons from home. It was a couple. So I was teaching a husband and wife. They wanted to do an FCE exam. So I had to do a lot of planning. As you know, teaching exam classes is quite a lot of work and requires students to do a lot of homework. But they had a small child and I don't think they had really thought it through. I don't think they knew what was required of them. They hadn't ever had teaching at home before. So me trying to teach them while their child was running around screaming, trying to do a listening exercise, nobody could concentrate. I tried it for a few weeks. I did my best. I gave them a warning and I said, you know, this isn't really working for me. If we can't find another place, then I don't think we can continue. And nothing changed. So, yeah, I unfortunately had to let them go.
That is such a pity. It's such a shame that they couldn't find the time to really focus on their language learning and specifically for an exam. How did you let them go?
I emailed them.
Oh, not even face to face.
No, I still feel bad about it. It's like breaking up with someone, isn't it? It's like, you know, you don't do it by text.
And in the email, did you say, hopefully we'll be able to continue these lessons again in the future?
Probably. Sounds like something I'd write. Yeah. Okay, Gav, make me feel better. Have you done the same thing?
I can't make you feel better, but the other way round, I may have been fired by a student, but in fact, I was just ghosted a couple of times.
What do you mean ghosted, Gav?
I mean, they stopped answering my messages when I said, hey, when's our next English lesson together? And they didn't reply.
Oh.
So I think I was sacked.
Well, there's no real closure with that, is there? You're never going to know. They could have lost their mobile phone with the SIM card. Maybe they don't remember your number.
That's what I tell myself, Em.
Well, oh, that would eat me up, that would. Not knowing is a hard one. You don't seem fazed.
No. There are plenty more pupil fish in the sea, Em.
Pupil fish? I'm imagining fish with big eyes now.
Now we're going to hear Manuel's question.
Hi, Gavin M. This is Manuel, and I have a question. What's the funniest story a student has ever told you?
Thank you, Manuel. Em, what's the funniest story a student has ever told you?
Funny, strange, or funny, ha-ha, Gav. I'm interpreting this as funny, strange, and maybe a bit ha-ha. But a student told me a story that I just think is unbelievable and epic, absolutely epic. He lives in a cottage in a forest with a few other cottages around it. And the nearest cottage to him has been empty for 5 years. And the old man that lived there lived alone. He was in his 80s. He went into a care home. Unfortunately, he died. But the house has been left vacant all this time. And recently, a couple bought the house and they've become his new neighbours. And he's got to know the neighbours. And every week, the neighbours tell him what's going on with the house they've bought from this old man. And the house was full of stuff, floor to ceiling, just full of stuff. I think he was a hoarder. He kept everything. He was also a little bit paranoid. So he had security cameras up everywhere outside the house with barbed wire and all these shutters on the windows and very high-tech security equipment. He had 18 safes in the house.
18 safes?
Yeah, all locked with no keys. So they've moved in and there's locked safes everywhere.
What a treasure trove.
That was a few weeks ago, but every week I get an update of the latest thing. So last week the student told me they've found a bag of keys and they've managed to open some of these safes.
Very good.
And I'm just sitting on the edge of my seat every lesson waiting to know what they've found. So last week they found a whole stack of Mont Blanc fountain pens, which Ooh. Are worth quite a lot of money in one of the safes. Another one had flare guns in it, which was a bit strange. No cartridges, just the flare guns.
That's very strange.
So yeah, it's always interesting what you find out about people.
That is interesting, strange, and quite funny as well.
It is peculiar and funny.
There are so many funny stories that our students tell us, Em. It's really hard to know where to start. But just a couple that come to mind. During one lesson, a student told me that he likes to sharpen his garden tools.
What you mean, like shears and things for cutting trees, that kind of thing?
Specifically, his spades.
Spades? That's not a tool I would necessarily connect with sharpening.
No, unless you have very hard soil to dig your holes. Anyway, I found out the reason why he does like to sharpen his spade. It was because he has an infestation of rats.
Oh.
And one morning, he got up to go and do some gardening, saw a rat across the other side of the lawn, threw his spade.
Oh.
And decapitated the poor animal.
Wow. That went in a direction I really didn't expect. I thought he would be just walking around kind of guillotine style, sort of chopping their heads off. But I don't suppose they're going to stay still for that, are they?
No, I think they'd run away. That's why his technique was probably quite successful.
What a skill. I mean, that could be an athletic Olympic event. To lob a spade across a garden and hit a rat so accurately that you cut its head off. That is impressive.
It was quite a funny and memorable story.
I wonder if his neighbours watch that and wonder what he's doing.
Yeah, I wonder. I would definitely watch.
You do learn a lot from these classes we teach.
You do. On the other side, Em, a teacher once told me to be careful next time I hang my washing outside. And I said, why is that? And he explained that the last time he pulled his underpants on, there was a lizard in there.
Goodness, I'm guessing this person was living in a tropical country.
That was exactly the point.
Wow. I suppose it goes along with check your shoes for scorpions, but check your pants for lizards.
Mm-hmm.
And by pants, Gav, I guess you're talking underpants.
Underpants, not trousers. It probably doesn't matter if you've got a lizard in your pocket.
Well, it would to me, but okay. Gav, let's have another question.
Hi, Gav and Em. This is Jan. Here's a question for you. Have you ever made a mistake while teaching?
Thank you, Jan. I'm not sure I should answer this question, as some of my students might be listening.
Do you think they might lose respect for you, Gav?
No, everyone makes mistakes. It's completely normal. But you have to admit to everyone, I've made a mistake, I'm going to correct it now, and that should be it.
Even if it's weeks later, I suppose, you can always come back to something you did before that was wrong. So what was it? Don't think I've forgotten.
I arrived at the wrong time to the lesson.
Oh, that kind of mistake.
By 45 minutes.
And they were still waiting for you?
I was 45 minutes early.
The wrong direction.
I don't think they knew what to do with me. They told me to wait in the cafe and drink as much coffee as I wanted.
Aw. Well, at least you weren't late.
No, that's true.
That would have been worse.
I've also sent the wrong homework to the students. Many times.
Yeah, that's a common one.
You know when you teach one thing and then you say, I'm going to send you some homework related to this thing, and then you send them something different, and then you wonder why they can't answer any of the questions.
Such a missed opportunity to give them something they could do. Never mind. It happens. As you say, we're all human.
How about you?
Yeah. Small ones, but sometimes big ones. I often teach the same lesson all week, so I plan one topic, one lesson, and I will do that lesson with every class I have all week. And this particular week, it was actually quite recently, I found some really good recordings. I think it was Market Leader, and it was all about companies that have made really pivotal decisions in their history that might have changed the outcome or changed their progress on the market.
So it transformed them from being a mediocre company to a very successful one that everybody knows.
Yeah. Sometimes it was a good decision, sometimes it was a bad decision. So the students had to listen and work out if it was a good decision or a bad decision. So actually, I'll be interested to get your opinion on this. It's only a really short thing. I'm just going to read you the transcript, okay? Because I did this all week under a complete misconception of what it meant. And I was talking to all the students as if I knew what I was talking about. And then the very last lesson of the week, one student said, I don't think it means that. And I realised he was right. And I had the whole thing wrong. And I had to go back the next week to every class and apologise and say, you know, that thing I said, well, it was wrong.
So you got taught something.
I did. The recording went something like this, Gav. Between the mid-70s and the early 80s, Swiss watchmaking companies saw their world market share fall from 30 to just 9%. Then, in response to strong Japanese competition, came the decision to collaborate. The result was the Swatch, and market share shot up to 50%. So when you read that, or when you hear that, came the decision to collaborate, who do you think is collaborating with who?
The Swiss watchmakers are collaborating.
And that would be right, Gav, and that's true, because I completely misunderstood this. And when it said came the decision to collaborate, I thought it meant with the Japanese companies.
Ah.
So there's me looking at all the pictures of Swatch watches online saying, oh, look how interesting the design is. You can see the Japanese influence, can't you? And I found out later, Japan had nothing to do with Swatch. It was the Swiss companies that collaborated. It wasn't very clear, in my opinion. So I taught the whole time saying, yeah, Japan and Switzerland, they had this amazing collaboration. And only after the student mentioned it and then I checked Wikipedia, I understood they didn't collaborate with Japan.
Well, well done for that student paying attention in your class.
Mm-hmm. Could have been a Monday student, couldn't it? Never mind.
At least you told the other students in the end.
Our next question comes from Melanie.
Hi, Gavin. Here's Melanie from Germany. I would like to ask, what's the most memorable lesson you've ever had?
Thank you, Melanie. The most memorable lesson I've had must be when I took one of my students around the city of Prague sightseeing, looking at the castle, at the bridges, at the fabulous markets and old museums and everything all in one day was probably the most memorable thing I have ever done with a student. It was such a fabulous experience.
Wow, Gav, that's an amazing experience. And you got paid for that.
I know. And the student got to practice his English and learned loads of info about the city, which he could then use when his family came to visit him and he took them on a tour.
Nice.
Also with the same student, we went shopping, we had some French pastries, we did a little rum tasting too.
Really?
It was such a great experience.
Wow.
How about you? What's the most memorable lesson you've had?
I think there's loads. When I look back, it's lovely because I have this like movie reel playing of all the great moments. And lots of times it is in the classroom where students are just working together and there's a real feeling of collaboration and that flows. You know, people talk about flow where everybody's in the zone and they're not focused on anything except what they're doing. And that for me is the magical moments. But when I think of a memorable lesson, it is also one that is outside the classroom. And I think I've mentioned it in a previous episode, but I had a student who worked in a big supermarket and he took me round the fish department and we were looking at all the fish and we were talking about them and he was asking me the names and I was asking him where they're all from and how they cook them. And it was just so interesting.
And sounds like a really practical and fun lesson to have together. How about memorable in a negative way? Because I certainly have one.
I can't think of anything negative right now, Gav. I'm not in the zone of negative. I'm thinking all positive things. Have you got a negative story?
There's just one that sticks in my mind for being memorable, but not for a good reason. And it's because I was in a cafe with my student teaching pharmaceutical English, and we overshot our lesson allocated time by an hour.
Wow.
We were having so much fun talking about medicinal things. We didn't realize the time had gone. And she was supposed to be in the middle of a really important meeting.
Oh, so that, I suppose, for her is negative. It's a bit confusing whether it's negative or positive. I guess if you're having that much fun, it's a good thing.
It's memorable.
Memorable.
That's why I fit it into this question.
That is amazing. I've never gone over more than 5 minutes, but I suppose time flies when you're having fun.
Which leads us perfectly to Tobias's question, Em.
Hello, this is Tobias from Germany, and I have one question. Which lesson would you like to forget?
Thank you, Tobias. There are a few I'd like to forget for different reasons. Sometimes it's because students make it difficult. Sometimes it's because I'm not prepared. Sometimes the materials I'm using aren't the best materials. But this one time, Gav, it was none of those things. It was me. I was the problem. I felt sick.
Oh, no.
Before the lesson.
Oh, dear. And you didn't cancel?
No, I didn't cancel. I don't know why I didn't cancel. It was a bad mistake in hindsight. But I do have, I'm not going to go into too much detail.
Should we add a trigger warning to this part of the episode?
No, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but there was something involving a rubbish bin.
In the classroom.
In the classroom, about 30 seconds before I was supposed to teach. But the end of the story worked out well, Gav. I pulled it together, I don't know how, and I taught that lesson and it went well.
It's a funny thing sometimes if you might have a headache. You might be drowsy, you may even have terrible pain, but as soon as you start the lesson, all of those things can actually fade into the background, just for a while.
Maybe that was partly to do with it. I think it crept up on me quite quickly as well. It was one of those things that just come and go quickly, but yeah, wasn't great. I would rather not remember it. And what about you, Gav?
I think I've blocked most of those bad experiences of terrible lessons that went awfully wrong from my brain. But I do remember quite a comical moment when I was invigilating in a TESOL exam and I was standing at the front of the classroom. There were about 20 people doing their exams. It was complete silence. I think we were halfway through the exam. You can imagine the absolute silence.
You could hear a pin drop, Gav.
That's it. And then I looked at my watch and I thought, oh, they've got 30 minutes left. I have to let them know. So I stood right in the middle of the room and I shouted, 30 minutes left. And you should have heard the screams and the shock on their faces. And I think one of them gasped.
Oh, no.
And I said, oh, I'm sorry, you've got 30 minutes left. Please continue. But for any of those students who were starting to lose enthusiasm or energy or focus, I think I refocused them and they probably passed that exam because of me scaring them.
You're a glass half full kind of person, aren't you? Don't worry about the other half that may have just been scared out of their skins. Wow. Well, those are the sort of things you learn never to do again, but you have to make that mistake and do it once.
I definitely did learn from that.
Yeah, I bet you'd rather forget that. Our next question comes from Johannes.
Okay. Hey, Gav and Em, this is Johannes. Could you answer this question? Who was the laziest student you've ever taught?
The laziest? Thanks, Johannes. I'm sorry to say it's teenagers. I'm not going to pick one specific one.
All teenagers, Em?
No, not all teenagers, but some teenagers have been quite lazy. And I get it. I remember when I was a teenager, I didn't really want to go to extra lessons after school. That really wasn't where my interest lay. So I get it, but yeah, it's not easy. Teaching sluggish, lethargic teens.
I have to agree with you there, Em, but I do really have to rack my brain to think of a single lazy student. I think usually I put the laziness down to my inability to engage that student and to make them want to learn and want to do the exercises that I set them in the class.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I always do point the finger at myself because I'm not that good at teaching kids and young people. So I do agree with you. If I had the right materials, the right topic, I'm sure it would be a different story. But sometimes I did feel like I had the best thing ever, spent a long time planning it, and it still just fell flat.
But it might work with some classes, but not others. So what does that tell you?
It's a bit random.
It is a bit random. And in the example of giving homework and the student saying, one week, I'm sorry, I was too busy to do it. The next week, oh, I forgot, did we have homework? And then the third week, homework? What is homework, Gav?
Yeah, you kind of lose the will, don't you?
Then I stop setting homework, Em.
And then a month later they say, well, can I have some homework? As if you've never given them homework ever before.
And then you start giving them homework and then they start giving you excuses.
The cycle just goes on and on. We all know it. Students know it. Teachers know it. But we play the game, don't we?
Thanks for that question, Johannes. Now we've got Violetta.
Hello, Kevin Dem. This is Violetta. I'd like to ask you a question. Have you ever met any unusual teachers?
Thank you, Violetta. Em, have you met any unusual teachers in all your years of TEFL teaching?
Lots of them, really. One stands out in my memory because she had an unusual pet, and it was a pet chameleon.
Oh, one of those lizard-like things.
Yeah.
Changes colour.
Yeah, and she took it to lessons quite a lot of the time. So the students got to know this chameleon. The chameleon was called Boy George.
Boy George.
So,
like the singer?
Yeah. Come, yeah.
Oh, that's a song, is it? Sorry, yeah.
So everyone knew Boy George. Everybody talked about Boy George. But I just loved the idea that maybe a new person to the school would just overhear, you know, oh, I saw Boy George eating a fly today, or yeah, Boy George was shedding his skin today, or something like that.
Or doesn't he look cool under his sun lamp on the sand, maybe slurping a mojito?
Well, I think that's applicable to both Boy Georges. But yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Out of context.
But in a terrarium, no.
No, good point. So that's, for me, the standout. What about for you, Gav? Who do you remember?
I've met plenty of teachers who shouldn't be teachers, Em. Maybe they couldn't handle the stress. Maybe they had no people skills. They couldn't work with kids. Maybe had problems with lateness, were quite disorganised. But unusual? Everybody's a bit unusual, Em.
I think you mean special.
Yeah, that's the word.
Aw.
I remember one colleague who came in with a rather unusual hairstyle, and I said to him, that's an unusual haircut you have. Where did you get that cut? And he explained to me, Gav, I did that myself, and I thought that explains it perfectly.
What did it look like?
It was like somebody started shaving their hair and then decided they wanted to have it long, so it was both short and long at the same time with some spiky bits. I think the gel was added to give it a little more character.
Okay, gel as well. Sounds a bit like a pineapple.
It was it was quite like a pineapple in reflection, yeah.
Never know if it's intentional, so I guess you just nod and go,
Like your style.
Yeah, suits you.
Now, this next question comes from George and Bernie. My parents.
Wow, very special guests today, Gav.
Hi, Gav and Em. This is George and Bernie.
We'd like to ask, where is the weirdest place you've ever taught? Thank you.
Thanks, George and Bernie. Thanks for the question. Weirdest. I've taught in some really nice places, like on a beach. That was nice. But weirdest, I'm going to say a radio communications tower. At 6 o'clock in the morning, at sunrise.
Wow.
That was weird and special.
And what does one of those towers look like?
Imagine a flashlight, Gav.
Mm-hmm.
And if that flashlight were a building,
mm-hmm.
and the base of the flashlight is on the ground. Why am I saying flashlight? Torch. The top part of the torch is the building. So right. It's surrounded by windows. And it's very, very high up.
That sounds amazing.
There were ladders involved. It was quite difficult to get to it.
What were you doing there?
I taught radio communications people English.
Wow.
And they offered one day to have a lesson in the tower. Usually we had the lesson in a regular little office on the ground floor, but this time they said, do you want to see the sunrise? It's quite nice from the tower. And I said, yeah. So we had to climb up into this tiny little room in this tower, and the sun came up as I was teaching past simple irregular verbs, and it was quite magical.
That is quite a weird place, but a magical place.
It was.
Nice.
It was weird and good. And what about you?
I think the places that stay in my mind the most are where I am exposed to the general public.
Wow. I wouldn't like to guess where. What do you mean?
I think they're referred to as goldfish bowls.
Ah, like you mean classrooms, but they're kind of front facing outward towards the public. So you look a bit like a shop front.
It's generally made of glass, it's windows all the way round, and as people walk down the high street, they look in and see a man pointing at a whiteboard saying the word yellow, yellow, and all of the students mouthing the same word. And on top of this, I think they're called telephone boxes, which again is basically a glass structure about 4 foot by 4 foot in the middle of an office. A regular office where you go and have a little mini meeting with someone.
Yeah.
And I am not comfortable in these very public situations.
But I know what you mean. Glass are all the way around and everyone can see how good or bad you are at teaching, and your board work is there for all to see.
Yes, and you're throwing your arms up and saying, it's enormous, it's tiny, it's broad, it's narrow.
Yes, if you're doing adjectives, I guess. And it's a bit like a performance of some kind. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But as you've said that, I also remembered a similar thing in offices, but this time it's like a soundproofed box in case somebody needs to make a call or just go and scream for a couple of minutes. And I remember having a lesson in there, and that was weird.
They're very small, aren't they?
Very, very small, and there's no sound reverberating, so it's very odd atmosphere. It's all very closed.
It's weird.
Very weird. So maybe that would be more weird than the other example I gave, which was just cool.
That was quite cool, being up that tower. That's well cool, Em.
Glass or soundproof boxes, definitely they're the weirdest for me.
Before we move on to the next question, Em, I'd like to know, what's the weirdest place Sar has ever taught?
Well, I don't know if this can be considered a weird place to teach, but it was in the army, in the Colombian army. It was a special program for international missions, and we had to teach soldiers. They had to get to a B2 C1 level, and the classes were held in the barracks. They had some spaces conditioned as classrooms. We had a computer room, which, well, the computers barely worked. But these guys were highly motivated. They really wanted to do this. It was an amazing experience. And don't get me wrong, these guys loved the activities. Actually, there was this guy who really surprised me. One day we were checking one of these videos from Epic Rap Battles of History. I don't know if you have seen them. Let's say it's not for children, but I think for adults it's okay. Well, they like them a lot. So we have two historical figures and they have a rap battle. And sometimes the commentaries are definitely not safe for work, but you can imagine we have the stereotype that people in the military like to have this kind of strong language. So two guys decided to learn, memorize, and, well, perform the one where Chaka Zulu and Julius Caesar have a rap battle. And they did it quite well. I mean, it was amazing. So yeah, I think that was weird.
That is amazing, Sar. Wow, what an amazing experience.
What a great story. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Our next question comes from Sonia.
Hi, Gavin M. This is Sonia. I'd like to ask you a question. What's the hardest thing about teaching?
Thank you, Sonia. Em, I'm going to throw this to you first. And you can't say keeping motivated as you feel the energy drain away while looking at your students' blank faces.
For me, it's been the same thing and continues to be the same thing. It is purely the task of keeping everything going as a teacher, and I would call it plate spinning. It's just the overwhelming amount of things I need to do and think about during lessons.
Can you describe this plate spinning?
Plate spinning is that thing where there's so many activities going on, so many actions going on, and you've got to just keep going back to one and monitoring another. And so that for me relates to teaching.
What are on these plates that you're spinning?
Well,
I like this metaphor you're using.
Definitely one plate's got teaching the language on it. Another has got keeping the interest. Correcting errors is on another plate. Writing notes is on another plate. Thinking of the next thing that's coming up. Checking the timing on another plate. Making sure everybody's working together. There are so many plates.
I don't think I even own that many plates, Em.
No, exactly.
Let alone be able to spin them up in
the
air.
That is it. I've not even skimmed the surface, Gav. That was just the first ones that came to mind. So all of these plates have to be kept up in the air during every lesson. And what about you? What's the hardest thing for you?
I think it's just keeping motivated when your students aren't. Because you can feel the energy draining away when you get one-word answers from your students, for example.
Mm, I agree, Gav, that can be draining. But I know your teaching style, Gav, and you are full of energy, so I'm sure it doesn't last for long.
You're right. Now let's get Felix's question.
Hi, this is Felix from Germany, and I do have a question for you. What's the best thing about your job?
Thank you, Felix. The best thing about my job would be seeing my students improve and gain confidence in English. Like when they return from a trip or a conference abroad where they had to speak English. Or, I don't know if you've had this, Em, but your student said, I was having my English lesson or I was on a conference call in English and my family member, my friend heard me and commented, wow, your English has really improved. You're so good at speaking English.
I completely agree with you. For me, those are the things that are the most rewarding, and seeing the confidence of students who weren't speaking at the beginning of the course, to see them flourish is just, for me, the best thing ever. And I love the variety of the job. I think we've said it many times. It's always different. People are so varied. It's great what they do, their opinions, their experiences. It's just every day is interesting for me.
And the materials that we use could be quite varied as well. So we can bring almost any topic into the classroom if the students are interested. We can talk about anything. We can learn anything we want.
That's true, Gav. It is very free. That is an amazing thing as well.
And there's just one more thing that I think is the best thing about my job, Em.
What's that, Gav?
Positive feedback.
Well, yeah. And that means you've done a good job and the students are happy. And that's what we all want.
Or just positive feedback anyway. I'm just happy for positive feedback. If anybody's listening, some positive feedback, please.
Sure. Well done, Gav. Well done. Have a star.
Only one?
The next question is from Dietmar.
Hello, this is Dietmar from Germany. Why did you become a teacher?
Well, Dietmar, I must admit, initially it was for selfish reasons. I wanted to travel, and TEFL teaching is good for that. But now is a totally different story, because I'm not really traveling anymore. I'm working from home, and my main motivation is to help people communicate, to help people get better jobs, to help people improve.
That's a great thing to do. If you want to hear more about Gav and Em's journey into becoming teachers, visit TEFL.org's I Taught English Abroad podcast, and you can hear the full story there. This question is from Albert.
Hi, Gav and Em. This is Albert. Here is my question for you. Who was the best teacher you've ever had?
Thank you, Albert. Great question. The best teacher I've ever had must be Mrs. Smith.
Oh, who's Mrs. Smith?
She was my primary school teacher, and I fondly remember going outside in the summer during the lessons, sitting under a tree, and she would read us nursery rhymes and children's stories and ask us questions while we picked up leaves and looked at them.
That's lovely.
What a lovely memory.
Mm. So that was really good that one of your first teachers was such a nice one.
She was absolutely lovely. How about you, Em? Who was your favourite teacher?
The person who comes to mind is Mr. Clegg, who was my art teacher from secondary school.
Uh-huh.
He always had time for me. He always encouraged me. No matter what I produced, he always saw something in it that was interesting and gave me some nice positive comments.
Sometimes that's all you need, is some interest and some positive feedback from your teacher.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Albert. Now let's hear from Katta.
Hi, Gav and Em. This is Katta, and I have a question for you. Who is responsible for the student's success, the student or the teacher?
Before we answer the question, Katta, let's go to our friend and teacher, Charlotte.
In my opinion, student success is the responsibility of both the student and the teacher. Of course, it is the responsibility of the teacher to motivate the student and to set out a structured plan of action containing the information that the student needs in order to reach their learning goals. It's also the teacher's responsibility to provide students with a comfortable working environment. Not only physically, in terms of the classroom, if you teach in person, but emotionally. I genuinely believe that providing a warm and caring atmosphere is conducive to student success. If a student feels comfortable with us as teachers, they will be more inclined to tell us if they don't understand something or if they need help. Having said that, it's also the student's responsibility to put the work in. When we talk about learning a language, you can't just attend a class 1 or 2 hours a week and expect to become fluent. It takes a lot of time and dedication outside of the classroom time to learn any language. And I'm talking from experience here, as I'm learning Greek. Students need to do all the work the teachers assign, including homework. They need to study what they have learned previously, because it takes a while for things to properly be absorbed by our minds. So all in all, I think it's fair to say that student success is a team effort.
I agree, 100%.
A team effort.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Thank you, Charlotte. Teacher, make sure the lessons are interesting, relevant and engaging. Student, bring energy, enthusiasm and get involved. Make it real and meaningful. Learn all the new language that you got from the lesson. Don't just write down the new words and never look at them again, but find a way to incorporate them. Put them into your lessons and practice them into the future, and they will stick, and your vocabulary, your knowledge of English will grow and grow and grow.
That's right, Gav.
Now let's listen to Mario's question.
Hi, Gav and Em. This is Mario, and one question. So how could I be a more successful language student?
Thank you, Mario.
And Mateus, by some coincidence, has the same question as Mario. We recorded this question last week during an online lesson with his group.
Hi, Gavin M. This is Matthias from Germany, Bavaria. I'd like to ask you one question.
Melanie, could you mute your microphone, please?
I did. At least I thought.
Yeah, it was me. Yes. Sorry.
Frida did the baby sound.
Yeah.
So I really thought I'd do it, and Matthias can do it again, and I'm muted.
Hi, Gavin M. This is Matthias from Germany, more precise, Bavaria. I'd like to ask you a question. How could I be a more successful language student?
Thank you, Mario and Matthias.
I would suggest finding something you enjoy doing from a language perspective and do it in English. So read the books you like reading, look at videos you enjoy watching, maybe get magazines on a hobby you have in English, and try and transfer that enthusiasm and energy you have for that thing, that hobby, that sport, whatever it is, and do it in English.
That is exactly what I was going to say. Get passionate about something in English.
Mm.
And then it's done. It's sorted.
Yeah.
Job's a good one.
How many students have you got who play online games and they can speak English so well because they've been communicating with people online?
They are so fluent without even trying them.
It's effortless when you find the thing you enjoy, but it's sometimes hard to find that thing. But I would also say look to what you are already doing. If you like beekeeping, if you like gardening, if you like bird watching, if you like badminton, find something online or a group or a chat room in that topic and get involved.
Finally, Em, our last question. I'm very sad that this is the end of the episode, the end of the season.
The end of the year.
Let's find out what our final question is from Fabian.
Hi, Gav and Em. This is Fabian. Could you tell me if there will be a new season of How to English podcast?
The answer, Fabian, is yes.
Is there?
Isn't there?
Well, I was going to. Are you?
So was I. So if you are, and I am, we
Gavin
are.
M.
We are.
We are. One more time.
We are.
Gavin M's How to English Pod will be back for a new season in the new year. Does that mean it's called Season 5, Em?
It's Season 5, Gav.
Wow. Five happy years of online podding, teaching and learning, learning and teaching with our fabulous teacher and student guests. What more can you ask for from life? Em, there's so much that we just didn't have time to cover in today's episode, but fortunately we'll be back and we can share all of these lovely stories, experiences and the knowledge of wonderful teacher and learner guests next year.
I'm looking forward to it, Gav.
See you in the new year, Em.
See you in 2024.
Happy New Year, followers. Bye for now.
Bye for now.